Please be seated.
Good morning. Anything arising overnight?
Two issues.
All right. Just
the first of which is a correction that I'd like to signal to the amended version of the plan change document that was most recently filed by Mr. Housemaker.
Yeah.
It's the recommended amendments mark and as at 19 February 2021.
Yeah.
Incorporating the corrections as at 4 March 2021.
Yep.
So I can take you to page 6 of that document. The page number's in the bottom left-hand corner. And there you'll see rule 10 capital A on 3.1 capital A.
Yeah.
If you turn over the page to what is page 7, but unfortunately there's not a page number there, but it's
right.
The next page.
Yeah.
And subparagraph B at the top of that page,
yeah.
Roman 1,
mm-hmm.
The activity meets conditions 1, 2, 4, 6 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be inserted Roman 5 into the group of cross-referenced provisions.
Yeah.
So insert 5 before 6.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. DePausemaker will speak to that correction when he's called to give his evidence later today or tomorrow.
Yeah.
The second issue that has arisen overnight, there's been some discussion between Council as to the utility of cross-examining Mr. Leslie and Mr. Wilson in relation to the methodology ahead of the expert witness conferencing, and Mr. Reid will address the court in relation to that discussion.
Mr. Reid.
Yes, may it please the court. It's the discussions have taken place overnight between Mr. Moore and Mr. Page and myself about just how to approach the technical issues or the the controlled activity pathway, which are in Schedule 10.4A. So the issues around the schedule are really highly technical. They revolve around issues such as selections of data sets, time periods, how best to ensure accuracy is maintained of the record. So any cross-examination of those witnesses at the moment is going to be highly technical. And so my suggestion is that we defer cross-examination of those witnesses, hear from them today, but defer cross-examination of them until the expert witness, the joint statement is back following caucusing.
Okay.
The only other thing I add is that my understanding is that good progress is being made already in relation to those issues amongst the experts.
It's probably a good idea, I think, as I reflected yesterday. Some people like to talk in numbers and as opposed to words, and it wasn't clear to us how you would approach your cross-examination.
Yes.
And to be fair, it's not actually clear to us that the witnesses are using the same, where they're using words, using the same language in the same way. So, for example, understanding what Mr. Leslie and Mr. Wilson is saying about percentiles is that what Mr. McIndoe is saying about percentiles? Actually, I don't know. And that should not be the case at this point in time, that we don't actually know whether they're talking about the same thing in the same way. We don't know whether they have disclosed all of the data that they are relying on and assumptions around that data, whether they've even tested the assumptions around, tested those assumptions and what impact those assumptions might have on their preferred methodology. Don't know that any of that's been disclosed.
No, I quite agree, Your Honour, and that's been apparent to
Council
looking had it over the last few days, particularly. So.
Which is to say, don't know your witnesses are following the code of conduct for expert witnesses. Now, that's pretty serious when you get to this stage, yeah?
Yes.
And so any expert conferencing, you are obliged to be providing your clients or your witnesses a copy of that code. The court will be expecting the evidence to come in a way which is reflective of that code in terms of setting out what your starting point is as you start to move from data, facts, assumptions, where you're testing certainties, uncertainties, and what impact that might actually have on the schedule. And it must be presented in that way, as opposed to two sides lobbying for their preferred preferred methodologies. For my part, I wasn't clear to what extent there is even an argument as between the regional council and the primary sector, apart from matters of detail, and yet. I'm led to believe there are substantive matters. Mm. I wasn't sure, so that was necessarily the case. I'm not sure whether ORAG schedule, the ORAG preferred methodology in the schedule is the same or different to LAMPRO. Some people think it's the same as LAMPRO. I'm not sure whether it's different to LAMPRO. I can read LAMPRO and understand LAMPRO, what they're wanting. I wasn't entirely sure whether you can read Ms. Dicey's preferred methodology and understand all of the steps. And this is, of course, a point to make in relation to the regional council. It seems to be one of the issues here are a lack of transparency. That is there a complete record of the methodology such that parties... whoever they are, when they're applying for resource consents, can be certain that they know how the methodology is applied? Or is it the case that all methodologies have a certain element of discretion and judgment, and which involves a lack of transparency, if you like, and therefore a lack of predictability, if you like, as to your eventual outcome under the schedule and actually under the competing schedules? So it's a comment about the competing schedules as well. How much is the, is it predictable? Is it certain? If I was a farmer, would I know that through the gateway, as it's been called, the schedule, I could predict myself at my farm gate what the outcome would be, or would the outcome be different when I send it into the regional council? That's a comment actually about all of the methods. We wonder whether there's quite a high degree of discretion and judgment being applied, whichever preferred method you go for.
Yes.
Is that appropriate for a rule, that it's not predictable? I don't know. Or have we picked it up not quite the right way? What I want to know before we use up our resources is what are the issues, and I think that the issues as between the competing methods. So we're not going to use already stretched resources for this court where you have not turned your minds to what are the issues. Now we know that at least some of the issues are about cleaning up the data, but is that the only issue? So really am interested to hear from Wilson, Leslie next, but we want to know, and we'll be asking them if you don't, what are the issues from their perspective? What are where is the ground or the gap as between their schedule and methods preferred by other witnesses? Bearing in mind that actually for some parties the answer is reject plan change, so it's not actually about picking up any of these methods, but these are fallback positions. So we actually want to know what are the issues. We don't want to be told topics. I prefer it to be put as questions which the parties themselves have to answer, or witnesses themselves have to answer in an expert conference. Yeah. So there is some ground, if not cross-examination, but some ground to cover in terms of getting out of these witnesses, where are the issues in relation to the methodology, not necessarily proposing a solution, but why would they go to expert conferencing? What do you think about that?
Well, is there ground, Your Honour, for counsel working that out in advance of, and trying to come to an agreement where we can about the issues that these witnesses or a series of questions perhaps for the witnesses and the other experts to consider? And
well, there's always ground, and I have invited parties to this case to consider appointing their own. I have said you do not need to wait on the court to initiate expert conferencing or mediation. You can appoint your own resources and crack on and do that. But the key thing about working out the issues is that actually you have to be informed by your witnesses. So this isn't about what lawyers think the issues are. It's about what the witnesses are telling you are the differences framed up as questions for the expert conference. So, in other words, an agenda. Now, we've spoken about that in detail in the notice of conference that we issued for this matter. It's absolutely critical that it is not lawyers doing this. It is experts doing this who can understand what the where are the gaps that need to be bridged. Still don't have quite an understanding as to what a proper understanding yet as to the relevance of the Aqualink method, other than it is a method that is considered. But again, what are the gaps between any of the preferred schedule methods and the Aqualink method? What's the ground that needs to be travelled there should it be mentioned in this plan? We don't know whether what is being suggested is that Aqualink method should replace the schedule altogether. There should be no technical schedule as we have it. So forget LAMPRO, forget the methods in IRAG, forget the method in PC7, but it just simply should be Aqualink. We don't know whether that's what's being suggested. So, as it happens, if you can work up a proper agenda, we do have Mr. Ross Dunlop standing by, and we could make him available. We've got to talk to him about it first, though, but we could make him available sooner rather than later.
Yes.
Do
you have a timetable?
I haven't discussed it with my friends. No. There's currently a schedule for the caucusing, but it's not until April.
Yeah, that's right. It's not. So, but Mr. Dunlop is available now. So I think we have to talk to him. We don't want to discover this stuff. And you know, if you can bring it forward, it should be brought forward.
And it's just a matter of trying to assist the court as best as we can.
Yeah.
My witness is Mr. Davran, who I'm not sure of his availability to come. He's scheduled to give evidence in Cromwell.
Yeah.
He's planning to attend the caucusing, but I'm sure could come earlier.
Your witness is Dr. Davran, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
And he's giving evidence on this legitimate overtaking topic.
Yes, it's largely around spikes and data sets.
Yep.
And,
okay. So in terms of what happens next, very interested. We'll be very interested to hear from the council's next two witnesses as to where they see the gaps, the differences between themselves and the other parties in the room, and so we can have a better orientation into the evidence of all of the parties. We can check through with Mr. Dunlop as to his availability going forward. Parties are to check through with their witnesses as to their availability over the next, starting now, actually moving forward. Are they available for expert conferencing? The direction will be that counsel, having been properly informed by their experts, are to propose an agenda for an expert conference, and we'll look to see how quickly we can bring that on. How does that sound?
That sounds excellent from my perspective.
Excellent.
Your Honour. Yes.
Oh, thank you.
just on the original issue I was raising, which is the cross-examination of these witnesses, Leslie and Wilson, today.
Yeah.
And also flowing on to, to a lesser degree, Mr. Pelsmaker, whether that should be deferred until after.
One of the things, I need to talk to the panel, and again signalled yesterday, is actually putting everybody on the same page as opposed to multiple witnesses on different pages proving different points with different data sets and different consents. How on earth do you think that's going to help?
And that's my point, Your Honour, is that I just can't see cross-examination on these topics being at all helpful at this stage. It needs to be that the issues need to be rationalised.
Yeah, no, well, we don't disagree, but that would come with a direction that would come with a direction as to council conferring and about how it is that they can illustrate the efficacy of the methods relative to using a common consent or consents, if you need to illustrate different things, and data set. So, for example, if there is and there appears to be disagreement over which five-year period, to illustrate the efficacy of the method over each different five-year periods which have been provided for a single consent. So you've got the single consent, data from the single consent, and running that data from the single consent through at least three different five-year periods that are in evidence, so that we can see how things are changing, if in fact they are changing.
Yes.
How it is that witnesses are going to be testing the proposition by Mr. McIndoe that, well, look, if you have a drought in 5 years, then that brings your average down and then throws out whatever your results are, resulting in an unreliable take of water. He might very well be true, but how has that been responded to, or how can it be responded to in conferencing? How do you test those propositions? Yes. Easy to say, and he could well be right, but how has it actually been tested?
Right.
So how do you think you'll go about that, actually getting that? Of course, again, it's not really a matter for lawyers, it's actually a matter for experts. Can you get yourself on the same page to be testing the efficacy of the different models and different approaches?
Well, I imagine that can be done. It's an issue for the experts amongst themselves, I would have thought, in light of Your Honour's comments.
Mm. Anyone got a different view, Mr. Moore?
I don't have the answer,
but in terms of the process,
I do see some utility in that unfolding. There are, of course, challenges as to availability of data, but it strikes me that the experts might usefully agree on a single data set against which they can test the various propositions through the lens of the types of consent applications that have either come in recently and been processed or, in fact, that's probably the best data set. So I'm confident that a data set could be produced against which propositions could then be considered and tested. In terms of the utility of proceeding on with the cross-examination today, insofar as the purpose of today is to identify and to tease out, well, where the differences lie between the competing methods, I do think there's real value in that exercise today, because that will inform the agenda for the conferencing. And so insofar as the purpose of either questions from the court or questions from counsel assists with that purpose, I do see real utility in that. In terms of Mr. De Pelsmaker and the cross-examination of him, it's not just the method on which he's given evidence. There's a large portion of his evidence which I think would be able to be tested in terms of where we're at. But insofar as he's relying on the methodology being produced by the witnesses, I think questions to him on that might usefully follow some conferencing. But it does occur to me that it would be helpful to explore with him what his understanding is as to what the schedule is delivering. So is it delivering a clear and certain and an objectively ascertainable outcome each time the same set of data is put into it? Is that how he's understood the purpose of the schedule? Because, again, I think that informs the job of the expert witnesses in terms of what it is they are seeking to produce in terms of that schedule. Mm. So its purpose becomes important in that regard.
Mm. So I'm going to respond to that, and then I'm going to come back to the question of the data set, which is what I'm making a note about. One of the things that it has occurred to us overnight would be quite useful for the court to understand is to understand whether or not your witness, Mr. Placemaker, how do you say?
Palsmaker,
works within the regulatory context of the regional council, or is he a policy person? That's the first question. And your response to that would be? Regulatory and consents, or is he policy?
Policy.
He's policy. And then the second question is this. It's to actually hear from somebody in policy, in consents in the regulatory team, whose responsibility it would be to administer this plan change, how they would administer this plan change. Because that's actually a very useful way to the court to test on the ground, to ground truth, what the methods are relative to how it would be administered. And of course it gets back to the court's observation, is there a certain amount of discretion and judgment now being applied when the applications come in, or not? Is it certain on its face? Of course, that question of discretion and judgment actually applies to all of the methods that we have seen to date. Or are they all predictable? So we thought it would assist us to hear from somebody who's actually within the consenting regulatory team, possibly the manager, but only if the manager actually has planning experience as opposed to managing people, is a planner as well, to understand what it is to understand how it is that they would administer that particular method, to also understand more broadly the issue of what is the scale of the problem actually facing the Otago Regional Council. We've heard all sorts of numbers around how many resource consents that are going to be applied for, possibly either by the end of this month, if they are deemed permits, or within 2 years. And we're looking like something over 500 applications for resource consent. What is the magnitude of that job? What people have been appointed to the Regional Council Consents and Regulation Team in relation to that job? What are the timescales which are going to apply? Are those for deemed permits? Are those the times and the others actually? If they're all coming in under 124, what is the timeframes that apply to 124? How are you going to approach it on a catchment by catchment basis, whatever that means, or are you going to approach it on an FMU by FMU basis? Is that how you're going to be approaching it? What are you doing in relation to the decision to come from the court? Are you going to defer and wait on the decision from the court? Actually, you probably can for some time in terms of some of the timing under section 124, but it won't, not indefinitely, I would not have thought. So we want to have a better understanding of that, because we wonder whether the key issue, not just a controlling factor, perhaps the controlling factor, is the sheer scale and magnitude of resource consent permits which are coming the council's way. If your team had now taken up processing consents, are they available for the higher level thinking which has to go into the land and water plan?
Yes.
Yeah. So we're trying to get a better feel for that. I think at best we've got a very high level feel, actually thanks to information being given to the Minister of Environment but provided to us on Friday, where even those deemed permits might be. Your scatter plots don't really give us a sense of where those deemed permits might be coming in and from what catchment.
Or renewals.
Yeah, I have in mind precisely the person that I think could best assist with those questions, and that is the the team leader of the consents team. I'll need to check on availability, but it strikes me that the sooner you can hear some of that information, the better it would be in terms of understanding the issue that is presented in this case. What I would be minded to do is to see, just check on availability as to when that person could be called to best assist the court with those questions.
Yeah.
And I have in mind that this week would be helpful.
It would be helpful. Actually, having something on paper would be even even more helpful. So it's not, we're not wanting to add to the 2,000 plus pages of evidence considering that that we already have, but we're really trying to feel more grounded in terms of the problem which this region is facing. And how is that? Yeah, trying to get a better feel for the scale and magnitude of this problem. Yeah.
Isn't there a plan?
There must be a management plan,
and, the risk of giving evidence from the bar, picking, for example, the number of people in the consents team, that's tripled over the last 18 months in terms of getting ready for the consent applications that are going to be lodged. So there is a plan in place, and the council is resourcing itself to ensure it can process those consents within the time constraints that the RMA presents. But in terms of the detail of precisely how that is to occur, I think that's better coming from directly from the witness.
Okay.
So we all look to get a brief of evidence prepared as quickly as possible and then have that witness made available to assist the court again as soon as possible.
Very good. Did you want to
add to... Oh, no, I think all my points have been covered,
All the points are covered, good. Anyone have any objection to that? The court having a better understanding about the scale and magnitude of problems being faced by the Regional Council, which isn't to say it's alone, actually. Every Regional Council is facing now... challenges in terms of responding to the NPS for freshwater management and also the National Environmental Standards, but this council has some unique problems in terms of the sheer number of deemed permits and replacement permits coming in. So has anyone got any difficulties with the court better understanding the resourcing and the issues? Mr. Page, you look like you might have a problem.
No, not a problem. I encourage the court to make the inquiry that you are pursuing with my friend. I was simply contemplating suggesting to the court that they make another direction, which is that a map be produced of the applications that are already in and the applications that are yet to come, because it seems to me from the evidence that you've got so far there's real opacity around what the scale of the task is spatially as much as some sheer numbers of permits.
It is a spatial question, you are right.
Yes.
We don't have a sense geographically. We hear a lot about Mana Herikia as if it is the ID catchment, which it's not. And that's of concern to the court, that it's thinking be dominated by a single catchment when there's upwards of 140 catchments this region.
In your direction from the 28th of October last year, the first thing that you asked for from the council's evidence was a catchment-by-catchment analysis of what the resource management issue is. And it seems to me that we're still grasping at that issue.
I suspect these things are very well known to council. It's not known to the court, but it's known to council.
Well, speaking from ORAG's point of view, ORAG only knows about its own members' affairs. And so we think that we've got the thick end of the permits under control, but we actually don't know what the rest of them are doing or where they are.
As a matter of interest, ORAG, does it only represent primary sector interests in the Mana Herikia catchment, or is it representing interests outside of that catchment?
Definitely outside of that catchment, Mark.
What are the catchments?
It has members in the Dunstan Rohe, it has members in the Alexandra Basin area and in the Tairi catchments as well. So largely central Otago, to be fair, not coastal Otago, but certainly well beyond the Mana Herikia catchment.
Okay. All right. Yep. So that's not asking for a state of an environment, more like a state of affairs at the regional council. And that would actually help orientate ourselves better into the evidence as well. Mm.
We shall get to work on that.
Very good. All right. That answers your questions, Mr. Reid. No, we don't need detailed cross-examination on the which methodology is to be preferred and why, but we do need questions on
assistance with identification of the issues.
Issue identification. Yes. What are the gaps that we're trying to traverse? Yeah.
On this exercise, what I was unsure about was how's the methodology that you're talking about actually reflected in the plan change? Because there's an, you know, so we've got these guys sitting in dark filled rooms crunching the numbers and all that, and they come up with an outcome. How's that then taken forward into the plan change document itself?
Yes.
It's which is another way of saying, is the process to the application of the method contained, completely contained within the schedule? Or are there other processes or sub-processes, an exercise of discretion and judgments being made outside?
Yes.
Now, that doesn't just apply to the regional council, but it's actually all methods. To what extent are they completely documented? Therefore, any farmer will know, talking about farmers in the main, but any farmer will know that if they apply the methodology themselves, they have assurance, you know, it is predictable what the outcome will be.
It's
not going to be massaged by the time their consultant gets to it under their method or the regional council gets to it under its.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. Well, yeah, Mr. Winchester.
Excuse me, at the risk of overcomplicating matters, and it's one thing I'm loath to do because this process does seem to be getting far more complex than it was originally intended.
Yes.
My first observation is I think the having some consenting information is critical, and it reflects a conversation I had with my client this morning about a gap of information before the court. One other aspect of that, which we haven't specifically addressed, is an interpretational issue around the rule frameworks and plan frameworks which are being advanced as to how they might be applied by the consenting team.
Mm.
And it may be a bridge too far for the regional council consents person to orientate themselves with the different versions of rules or plan provisions which are being advanced and be able to express a view as to how they might be applied in a consenting context.
Yeah, and it's really, we're interested in that consenting context is how they might be applied. I don't know, over to Mr. Moore, whether he thinks the person would be able to get their head around, I guess, who are the candidate methods, apart from your own? The candidate methods would be what, Lampro, ORIG, who else has put up a candidate method?
My client, Your Honour.
Your client, yes.
Yeah.
And?
Fish and Game.
Fish and Game. You've altered the schedule?
I think Mr. Winchester's talking more broadly than just the schedule.
Oh, I see.
Indeed, Your Honour, it's not just to do with,
with
the methodology.
I was going to go with it. But
yes, so it is more broadly. It's more around the mechanics of the rules, not necessarily the discrete issue of the methodology and the schedule. And as I said, I am loath to overcomplicate it.
My gut feeling is that that's a issue for cross-examination, I would have thought.
That's fine.
Because we have, I think it's an issue for cross-examination, yeah. The how clear and certain the objectives and policies are, I think, is where you're going to, and therefore the rule itself, the implementation of the rule.
It's a mixture of the clarity and implementation of the policies and the rules that are being advanced. And I'm certainly content to put that to Mr. DePelsmaker in terms of his methodology and the other planning witnesses. Really, the question is whether that position can be rounded out from a regional council point of view. in terms of their current practice and how they might apply.
Because it seems to me that it is a major issue at this hearing is the levers, whether the controlled activity rule is even a lever, because it requires quite a bit of effort. And then, of course, we've seen some parties, Minister would be the obvious example, take away the effort and make it the lever that it was intended to be. And then we can see other parties adding in more effort. Well, if you're going to add in more effort, why don't you just apply for a non-compliant resource consent? So is it that sort of issue that you're getting at? How much effort is required from an applicant?
Well, that is more a consequence rather than a driver, although there is no small irony that parties are seeking to tip more into the schedule when they are complaining about cost and uncertainty. I don't have a witness in that area, so that's just an observation from the bar.
My sense is perhaps leave that for cross-examination. Yes. We can revisit it in an expert conference thing if we need to. Would that be that right?
Yeah, I think it could be quite difficult.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honour.
Just so for broader context, it is not uncommon for the court to make this direction. I can think of one case Commissioner Evans was reminding me of this morning when she and I were sitting again on a regional plan, not this region, where we asked to speak to the regulatory manager. And we said, regulatory manager, how would your policy team's preferred policy and rules and regs work? He said they wouldn't. He said they could not be implemented by the region, which was speaking volumes. So, you know, had to do something else in that space because his team couldn't implement them. Why not? Because the two teams hadn't talked to each other. As it turned out, the two teams hadn't talked to each other. So this isn't actually uncommon. And we would like to know more, both in terms of the broad setting and workability of the schedule. And, yeah, schedule. Okay. So we'll leave it to you to have a talk to who you need to have a talk to. Let us know when something can be put on paper. Scope out what you think would be useful for you to cover and come back to us about that. We can save up cross-examination. For another day after expert conferencing. We'll talk to my team will be talking now to Mr. Dunlop to see when he can be made available and where he can be made available. He has certainly read all of this evidence and is well aware of the technical issues or the competing technical issues.
So did you propose the court would facilitate that conferencing?
I think it would assist just in terms of keeping focus on the issues in contention, just based on how the evidence seems to have gone apart rather than come back together. So that would be...
Counsel to confer and to advise when it is that they will have a chance to talk to their witnesses about the issues agenda. So it has to be informed by the experts. And you can expect Mr. Dunlop to be pressing into that space as well if he's not satisfied that he has a proper understanding of how you see or your witnesses see what the issues are. Anything else we need to do? I don't think so.
Just picking up on the breadth of the brief of evidence that will come from the council's consents team leader. Insofar as she has working knowledge, it will relate to the plan change 7 as notified schedule, and I think it will be helpful to test how that's being used in practice, because that's something on which there will be knowledge already. Insofar as knowledge as to competing schedules put forward, she will have no working knowledge of those. She's not had to engage with those at this point in time. So... there could be quite an exercise in terms of getting up to speed with the relative merits of competing schedules, and I don't foresee a huge amount of benefit in the court receiving her assistance on that matter, given that she won't have had any opportunity to really to think about those competing schedules.
I don't know about that. I mean, in as much as if she picks up another schedule, is it clear and certain on its face or would she have to make inquiries as to the meaning of terms? Is that all the would she have a sense of, well, that's, you know, if it comes in this way, that's all the information I require, or do I already know that I'd have to be making more inquiries? So really it's trying to gain an understanding of transparency and certainty.
Yeah, at a principled level, there is benefit in that discussion, and picking up on the discussion much earlier today around a need for a certain and objectively ascertainable method that is repeatable irrespective
of who
uses it.
Yeah.
It strikes me that that is the thing that we should all be aiming at, and I would have thought that that is what would best assist the consents team, but let's hear from hear from her about that.
Because at the end of the day, we don't want to make a decision giving you something which your consents team can't administer.
It's just that there may be some council guidance material that, that the consents team are actually applying, and it would be useful to understand about that as well. There may not be, or it might be on a website and available to everyone, but I guess we just want to be clear what ruler they're running over things and whether that's publicly available and known.
Yes, and there is reference in the evidence that is before this court in relation to the guidelines that assist with the current water plan and how the calculations occur, and Mr. Leslie will be able to assist in relation to that, which perhaps provides a useful contrast in terms of what might best assist the council and its consents team as a result of this process, because I think there are and have been identified some issues with the current process in terms of clarity or a lack of clarity in terms of the plan that is informing how the calculations occur. So, again, Mr. Leslie can perhaps start that discussion today in terms of the current situation, the challenges with dealing with reallocation or allocation on renewal, and then contrast that with what's being put forward here in terms of the method in Schedule 10A. So that's probably as far as we could advance that discussion this morning, but it has been helpful in terms of, again, clarifying the issues that are at stake in this proceeding. I now propose to move to the next witness for the council, and it's neither Mr. Wilson nor Mr. Leslie. We have two other witnesses to appear before each of those are able to assist us on this topic, and the first of which is Dr. Snelder.
Yep.
You confirm that your full name is Antonius Hugh Snelder?
Yes.
And you are a Director of Land and Water People Limited and a Consultant Researcher in the field of Water and Land Resources Management?
Yes.
And you have prepared a Statement of Evidence in reply dated 19 February 2021?
Yes.
And in that statement you've set out your qualifications and experience at paragraphs 3 and 4?
Yes.
Are there any corrections that you wish to make to your Statement of Evidence?
No.
You confirm that your statement of evidence and reply is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Could you please now proceed to give a short summary of the key points from your statement of evidence and then remain to answer any questions from the court and from my friends?
ORC engaged my organisation to undertake a study of water quality state at river and lake monitoring sites in the Otago region, using the most up-to-date available data from monitoring. The scope of the study was to evaluate water quality state and to grade each site relevant to attributes designated in the National Policy Statement of Fresh Water. That document, which reports the results of that study, is appended to my evidence.
Thank you. suppose it's just an observation, really, that you've provided all that data, but I think you said you've done no interpretation or anything like that of the data. Is that right?
That's correct.
So it's just there for information at this stage, is that right?
I believe so.
It's not connected to anything to do with...
No.
No, OK. That's my appreciation, so thank you for confirming that. Thank you, Your Honour.
Commissioner?
Oh,
no. No questions from me. Cross-examination, that'll be you, Mr. Page, I think. Oh, sorry, Ms. Irving.
Good morning, Mr. Snelder. I just want to start with understanding whether you're aware of whether the similar analysis that you've done was completed under the previous NPS, because there were attributes, obviously, in the 2017 amended version of the National Policy Statement. Do you know whether the Regional Council completed an analysis of the water quality against those standards?
Yeah, no, I do not know whether they did.
Okay, so based on your knowledge, is there much that has changed as between the 2017 and 2020 versions of the NPS?
The attributes that have changed are some of the Appendix 2B attributes. So the 2A attributes are the same between the two versions of the NPS. The 2B attributes are new to the 2020 version of the NPS.
Okay. I think, as Commissioner Bunting mentioned, you say in your brief of evidence that you haven't yet interpreted the results. They're simply an analysis of the data. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so you haven't yet interrogated the results to understand the reasons for the various grades against those attributes?
No, there's been no analysis of the relationship to resource use.
Okay. Despite that, the data itself helps provide us some insights, doesn't it?
Yes.
Can I take you, please, to your Appendix C in your brief of evidence, particularly Table 6. It doesn't have a page number, unfortunately.
No.
It's the table relating to nitrate.
Nitrate, yep. Yes.
I'd like to take a look at some of the key catchments from a deemed permit perspective. Are you familiar with those?
Not in great detail, but I have some understanding of the geography of Otago.
Sure. So perhaps if we start with the Arrow catchment.
Right.
I think. Fifth row down.
Yes.
And we see there that it meets Band A.
Yes.
Perhaps moving down the page to Dunstan Creek. And do you understand Dunstan Creek to be in the Manuhitakea catchment?
Yes.
Also Band A. Correct?
Correct.
Turning over the page, if we look at the Manuhitakea catchment, those are all in Band A.
Correct.
In the following page, perhaps we look at the Tyree. And once again, we see that we are all in Band A.
Correct.
So those results would help us understand, or at least lead us to believe that with respect to nitrates, water quality against that measure is performing reasonably well.
So what that tells us, that attribute is nitrate toxicity.
Yes.
So it's about the effect of nitrate on toxicity. Nitrate has another effect, which is to stimulate the growth of algae.
Yes.
So these numbers are not necessarily, while they're in the A band in terms of toxicity, so they have very low level of toxic influence, it does not necessarily mean that they aren't problematic from a algal growth perspective. To understand that in more detail, you would need to do some more analysis to really understand that.
Yeah, and the periphyton assessment would assist with that, would it?
Yes, it does.
So perhaps if we can go to table two, the periphyton table. First page of your Appendix C, I believe.
Yes, sorry, I'm just getting there.
No, that's fine.
Right.
So my understanding with the periphyton attribute, we have a national bottom line between C and D.
Correct.
And so if we look down the second to last column, we see there's more variability in relation to periphyton than perhaps with the nitrate measure.
Correct.
So what kind of things contribute to variation in this attribute?
Right, so periphyton is the response of the algae to the nutrient concentration, but it also depends on a number of other factors, including the temperature, the light available for plant growth, and importantly, in this case, flow. So the duration of time between flood events that wash the periphyton away is important, and any changes in flow that are caused by abstractions can increase that duration and therefore lead to more instances of the periphyton getting to a biomass, which is unacceptable.
Do factors such as the presence of Didymo influence the outcomes of this attribute?
Yes. Well, Didymo is a type of periphyton. So periphyton is a mixture of many, many things, primarily algae, and Didymo is a type of algae. So Didymo influences the biomass that's measured at sites where Didymo is present.
Yes. Can I take you, please, to Appendix C? Table 8, which is the clarity table. Factors that might affect clarity would include a number of natural factors. Can I take you to the dart at the hillocks in that table by way of example?
Hillocks.
Do you know the Dart River at the hillocks?
Oh, the dart.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Do you know where the Dart River is?
Yes, I do.
Would you agree with me that the Dart River, at least in part, drains Mount Aspiring National Park?
Correct.
And so we could, or would suspect that the reason that the dart at the hillocks is at level D is likely to be a natural factor?
Yes.
Same might apply for the Invincible Creek at Rees Valley Road?
Quite possibly.
If we go over the page to Thompson's Creek. You would agree that Thompson's Creek is in the Manahitakia catchment?
I'm not familiar with Thompson's Creek, I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with that particular location.
That's okay. Are you familiar with the Kaikarai stream?
In Dunedin?
Yes.
I know its geography. I know of its geography.
From a land use perspective, what kind of activities or behaviours would affect clarity?
In an agricultural setting, stock access to the stream and the banks are an influence. Erosion caused by that land use obviously influences the amount of sediment that gets into the stream and affects clarity. In an urban environment, similar land disturbance, leaving land bare, and erosion of the stream, perhaps caused by rapid discharge of stormwater from urban development, urban land, etc. Those are the sorts of processes which lead to degradation in stream visual clarity.
So, talking then about the rural land uses and activities near the beds of waterways, are the risks associated with that in part dealt with by the stock exclusion and fencing requirements under National Environmental Standard?
Yes, that I believe that's the intent of, at least one of the intents of those regulations.
I'd like to take you now, please, to your Appendix C, Table 20, which is the dissolved reactive phosphorus table.
Sorry, which... Where are we at?
So,
table.
Sort of the last two pages, two or four pages of the Appendix C. So, the last pages of that document. Sorry, there aren't any page numbers, you're honest.
I'll just see if I can.
It is the last four pages of the brief, Your Honour. Again, I'd just like to discuss the reasons that we might see elevated levels of phosphorus. Can you explain those?
So elevated levels of phosphorus may well arise from erosion. It's generally a superficial wash-off which elevates it. So where there might be stock access to the stream or areas of erosion, that's a likely route for phosphorus to get into the waterway.
Do you tend to see it more where irrigation methods are overland flow methods?
Correct.
And so performance against that measure might be improved if we move to more efficient forms of irrigation with less runoff?
Correct.
I have no further questions, Your Honour.
In answer to the last question, are you suggesting that the only cause, the only reason for overland flow is the use of wild flooding or border dike? I think that's where that question was going.
No, that's not my intent. No, so what my answer was that non-spray methods of irrigation are known to cause a higher wash-off than spray irrigation and therefore can increase a phosphorus wash-off to a greater extent. But phosphorus can be elevated through a response to rainfall from pasture that might be perhaps eroding, also to stock access to streams with erosion of the banks, etc. So there are a variety of mechanisms.
Yeah, it's a land use issue, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes.
And so, for example, stock access to streams, stock access to critical source areas such as gullies and swales.
Yes.
It can be a result of applying irrigation water when the soil moisture content is already elevated. Consequently, even under irrigation and efficient irrigation, there is overland flow. There's a whole variety of
yes, issues. That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. Of which is to do with land use. The various activities taking place, the nutrients being applied, and the methods of irrigation.
That's
and the
correct.
Timing of irrigation.
Yes.
So, quite a complex issue.
Correct.
Not merely resolved by moving from border diking to a spray irrigator. Would
no,
that be correct?
That's quite right.
Okay.
Yes.
Anything else that you need to add to in terms of the questions put to you by Council about the complexity of understanding nutrients, preferred pathways, or other pathways through the environment?
Well, I think you summed it up very well there.
Mm-hmm.
It is very complicated, and our understanding of those processes is not not complete.
Mm.
But generally, we do see a relationship between different types of irrigation and higher and lower phosphorus. So we do see improvements in phosphorus concentrations when irrigation is shifted from wild flooding type methods to spray irrigation. But you're quite right that it does depend on the practices as well.
Mm.
Yes, and it's complicated.
And is the new environmental standards regulating all those practices, just even the ones that I've touched upon, or any one or two of them? What's the extent of its reach?
So that's not really my area.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't try and answer that question.
Mm. All right. Anyway, re-examination.
No questions.
Any questions? No questions? All right. Well, thank you very much,
thank
Dr. Snelder. Thank you. Next witness, or do you want to... Next witness, yeah.
I think we'll proceed. I now call Dr. Everett Hinks.
To God that the evidence you're about to give in the matter before this court will be the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I will.
Thank you.
Do you confirm that your full name is Julie Marie Everett Hinks?
Yes.
And you are the science manager at the Otago Regional Council?
Yes.
You have prepared a statement of evidence in chief dated 7 December 2020 and a statement of evidence in reply dated 19 February 2021.
Yes, that's correct.
And you have set out your qualifications and experience in your paragraphs 3 and 5 of your evidence in chief.
That's correct.
Are there any corrections that you wish to make to either of your statements?
No.
Do you confirm that your statements of evidence are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and ability?
That's correct.
If you could now proceed with a short summary of the key points from your statements of evidence in chief and then remain for any questions from the court and from my friends.
Thank you. Morena, Your Honour. Kia ora tātou. Ko kahiko te maanga, ko waiwera te awa, no o tako aho. Ko Everett te whānau, ko Julie Everett Hinks aho. No reina, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou,
yeah.
Tēnā koutou katoa. My name is Julie Everett Hinks. I'm a sheep farmer's daughter from South Otago, so this is where I was raised. I am the science manager here at the Otago Regional Council, and I have been for nearly 2 years. I am providing evidence in relation to the Council's science work program between the investigation undertaken by Professor Skelton and the upcoming notification of the new land and water plan. The Council's science work program, well, following from Professor Skelton's report, a number of key areas were identified in which the Council could make improvements to its utilisation of its freshwater management functions. This review recognised that a significant upgrade of the planning framework was required in order to give effect to national direction, and that rectifying the current lack of scientific knowledge in the region is necessary to provide a good, robust evidence base for a new land and water regional plan. While the Council does hold some scientific data on the state of the environment, the data held by the Council does not identify and explain environmental issues, including their causes and location and their source, and does not contain conclusions and their significance in this regard. In order to achieve the notification of the new land and water plan in 2 years, the Council has taken a number of prominent steps. These include taking a regional level precautionary approach, and that is, in simple terms, grouping the freshwater management units into 4 categories based on degree of modification from a natural state in order to identify where further hydrology and scientific information should be prioritised. Areas with complex hydrology and diverse pressures on competing values will be the subject of catchment-specific modelling, whereas catchments with less modification will use these regional level precautionary models. The purpose of this approach is to ensure that the science, required science work, will be sufficient to inform the development of the land and water plan in the time frame that was given. Further work is required as a result of the essential freshwater reforms late in 2020 to create a detailed inventory and development of a monitoring program, a representative estuary monitoring program, fish surveys, fish passage connectivity projects, a review of our primary contact program to ensure compliance, additional attribute measures at a greater number of sites. This work will inform the development of the land and water regional plan to ensure that it is consistent with and gives effect to the relevant higher order documents. Increasing the capacity and capability of the science team through taking on multiple additional team members. Professor Skelton's review, in line with a previous independent report, found that there was a shortage of approximately 4 to 6 full-time equivalent scientists to carry out the work on practical hydrology and hydroecology. And he also referenced in that report a shortage of environmental monitoring technicians as well. Following a reorganisation of the science team in May 2020, the Council has now created a structure similar to that recommended in previous reports. It means that once all of the positions are filled, there will be about 21 full-time equivalents, up from 9.4. While recruitment is ongoing, and there have been additional challenges in terms of sourcing applied scientists at the right level due to higher demand within New Zealand and an ability to bring overseas scientists and due to border closures, these new positions allow internal knowledge to be built and strong networks to be built with other councils, Crown Research Institutes, universities and agencies to access national advice and knowledge. It ensures the Council has much of the expertise required to inform the future development of the land and water regional plan and continue on with consistent and robust monitoring systems and regulatory reporting, issue identification and integrated management without having to rely on external consultants, short-term contracts and excessive costs to ratepayers. That's my summary, Your Honour.
Thank you. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you. With you, Ms Irving.
We've stopped again. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I was learning to go with the first name on the list, which is Ms. Irving, but obviously it's swapping us between each other. Sorry.
Well, if you just mentioned ORUG, we'll sort it out between ourselves who's going to do what. So.
No worries. I had thought that the schedule actually reflected your sorting out, but maybe it's resorted. But no, it's okay.
Dr. Everett Hanks, do I take it from your first, your paragraphs 3 and 4, that your specialist expertise is in animal genetics?
And farm systems, agricultural science.
Yeah. So in matters of, I see you haven't attempted to qualify yourself as an expert in giving expert evidence. You're giving evidence as a manager, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And so on matters concerning how a hydrological model should be built or an ecological model should be built for a catchment, you defer to those who have that relevant expertise, do you?
Yes, that's correct.
And that would include your predecessors in your current role, Dr. Olson and Mr. Hickey.
That's not entirely correct.
Well, Dr. Olson's an expert ecologist.
Yes.
And Mr. Hickey has ecological qualifications and experience in preparing hydrological studies.
That's correct.
So when they express an opinion about the time it takes to prepare hydrological studies and ecology studies, you would defer to their advice?
Amongst others' advice as well.
Were you in court when Mr. Henderson gave evidence yesterday?
Yes, I was.
And did you understand him to say that for the Arrow, Cardrona and Manuhitakea catchments, the hydrological models exist to enable the council to make decisions?
Yes, I heard that.
And do you agree with it?
There's always a degree of uncertainty with any model. Models can be developed for almost anything, for almost any degree of data that's available. It comes down to the level of risk that you want to accept with that model.
Well, is the Regional Council proposing to do any more work on the hydrology of the Cardrona, Arrow and Manuhitakea catchments before it notifies the Land and Water Regional Plan?
Can you please clarify with regard to work?
Well, you've explained that all models contain risk.
Yeah.
And it's a question of how much risk the council's prepared to accept in using models.
That's correct.
Right. Mr. Henderson told us that models exist for Cardrona, Arrow and Manuhitakea.
Yes.
Yeah. Is the council proposing to use those models in its preparation of the Land and Water Regional Plan?
Yes, it is.
It is. Thank you. Is the council proposing to build similar models for other catchments?
Yes, it is.
Which ones?
Based on the categorisation we have done, on the Tairi FMU, the North Otago FMU, and the Clutha Matau main stem.
On those three.
Sorry, can you say that again? I didn't catch the models.
We believe that there's complex hydrology issues and diverse pressures on competing values within the Tairi FMU, North Otago FMU, and the Clutha Matau main stem.
Tairi North?
North Otago.
North Otago, yeah. In the last place?
Clutha Matau, main stem.
Yep.
But not for any of the tributaries of the Clutha Matau?
It may be that we require more fine-scale modelling in different areas. Can I please add that this is the approach we've adopted given the timeframes that we have been given.
And does that work for the Clutha-Mata Almain stem, for the Tyree FMU and for the North Otago FMU? Is that being done within the council or through external engagement?
We are scoping that work out currently, and we will make that decision as to whether that goes to external consultants.
So do I take it that for Clutha-Mata, Owl, Tyree and North Otago, that work hasn't even begun?
That's correct.
And what is the deadline for the delivery of that work to enable it to provide the basis for policy formulation in relation to those catchments?
Approximately the end of 2022.
Now let's talk about North Otago FMU for the moment. Are you familiar with the various catchments that make up the FMU?
Reasonably familiar.
So we have the Wainakarua. We have the Shag or Wahimo catchment. And the Kakanui catchment. And also the Lower Waitaki, don't we?
That's correct.
So each of those have separate hydrological characteristics and data sets, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And nobody has been engaged to deliver hydrological models for any of those catchments yet. And you're confident that it can be delivered by the end of 2022?
As I mentioned, we have engaged with others to ensure that we have a regional precautionary approach model as a baseline for the whole region.
Can you explain to me what that regional precautionary approach model actually contains?
It's based on the hydrology. It's a hydrological, hydrological model that looks at what the natural state. Well, I'll put it in your honour's terms from yesterday: naturalised state for many of the modified catchments. For those that haven't been modified, it will provide the natural flows.
Right. So we're not talking about constructing a hydrological model that utilises actual take data from permits.
Can you please repeat that question?
So you're not referring to a hydrological model that utilises actual take data from permits in each catchment?
No, that's correct.
Because the model for the Manaherikia that Mr. Henderson was describing yesterday took 2 to 3 years to build, didn't it?
I believe that's the case.
Yeah. So we simply don't have time for a model of that level of sophistication to be built between now and the end of 2022 for other catchments, do we?
The Manuhiriki, I understand, was an exception, probably the most modified and most complex catchments in the region and potentially New Zealand.
But Mr Henderson described the Tari FMU as being similar.
I'm not sure. That wasn't my recollection of his evidence. Can you recall what he said about other catchments?
That wasn't my recollection either, Your Honour.
I thought the Manuhiri Hariki he described as being the most modified, most complex, both in terms of hydrology and also where water was travelling within the catchment as a result of modifications, but that other catchments, and I thought he mentioned Tidy, were simpler, relatively simpler, even though there's modification there too. Hydrology and geohydrology were simpler. Isn't that what he said, or have I totally misheard?
Well, I check his written evidence, Mum, because I had understood from his written evidence that he'd grouped Manuhiriki and Tairi together as having similar complexities.
I'm just recalling a verbal response, but if you could check and put that, actually put the evidence to the witness from the correct page, if that's what you're referring to.
Your Honour, we do understand the Tairi to be complicated. That's why we have taken the approach of undertaking fine-scale modelling for the Tairi.
Yep. It is as complex as...
We are led to believe that it is not quite, but that we do not know. Yep.
Yeah. Paragraph 70 of 70. Mr Henderson's evidence in chief is the one I had in mind, Mum.
Yeah.
Two catchments where these approaches may struggle, however, are the Tairi and the Manuhirikia. Both have significant water storage to provide water for irrigation when rivers are very low. Both have extensive redistribution systems based on water races that have been repurposed from their original use for gold mining. And both have a high level of water use by comparison with available water.
Yeah.
All right. And your question is, based on that, how can this witness be confident that a model will be available within 2 to 3 years?
Well, by the end of 2022, well, Mark.
End of 2022,
yeah. We will do all that we can to ensure that we can deliver according to the Minister's timeframes. What will be deemed the challenge is how much risk the Council and community and stakeholders can accept with models that aren't fine scale.
In relation to the Tairi catchment, Mr Henderson wasn't able to help me with the current scheduled minimum flows for the catchment. Are you familiar with those?
Not directly. I'd have to refer to the plan.
All right. And are you familiar with the Maniatoto Irrigation Company consents to operate the Loganburn Reservoir?
No, that's not my concern.
Okay. Has your team, the resource science team of the Otago Regional Council, contributed to the preparation of the proposed regional policy statement?
Yes, we have.
And that regional policy statement, do you understand, is to be notified in early June?
That's correct.
And do you understand that part of what that regional policy statement is intended to address is the meaning of Te Mana O Te Wai in relation to each of the FMUs?
That's correct.
Nothing further, Mum?
Re-examination.
Your Honour. You had a question put to you in relation to whether there was sufficient hydrological information available to proceed to a plan change in respect to the Manuhirikia catchment. Is it as simple as simply having sufficient hydrological information and then proceeding straight to a plan change, or are there some other steps that need to be undertaken to get to the point of preparing a plan change or a new plan?
Yeah, I see that information is the foundation or the base from which all the other layers of data and information need to be applied, such as ecological values, cultural values, land use activity, mahangakai sites. So that is just merely the foundation from which everything else will be based for the MPS FM 2020.
So it's the hydrological component is perhaps one piece of a jigsaw. It's not the complete picture.
That's correct.
Thank you. No further questions.
Talk over the break whether we have any questions for you. So you remain on your oath and we're going to have a cup of tea because it's that time of the day, or that time of the morning, and we'll be back. Thank you.
All rise.